Science and Health, Chapter 7. Physiology. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Jesus. He sent his word and healed them and delivered them from their destructions. Psalms. Physiology is one of the apples from the tree of knowledge. Evil declared that eating this fruit would open man's eyes and make him as a god. Instead of so doing, it closed the eyes of mortals to man's God-given dominion over the earth. To measure intellectual capacity by the size of the brain and strength by the exercise of muscle is to subjugate intelligence, to make mind mortal, and to place the so-called mind at the mercy of material organization and non-intelligent matter. Obedience to the so-called physical laws of health has not checked sickness. Diseases have multiplied since man-made material theories took the place of spiritual truth. You say that indigestion, fatigue, sleeplessness cause distressed stomachs and aching heads. Then you consult your brain in order to remember what has hurt you, when your remedy lies in forgetting the whole thing, for matter has no sensation of its own, and the human mind is all that can produce pain. As a man thinketh, so is he. Mind is all that feels, acts, or impedes action. Ignorant of this, or shrinking from its implied responsibility, the healing effort is made on the wrong side, and thus the conscious control over the body is lost. The Mohammedan believes in a pilgrimage to Mecca for the salvation of his soul. The popular doctor believes in his prescription, and the pharmacist believes in the power of his drugs to save a man's life. The Mohammedan's belief is a religious delusion. The doctor's and pharmacist's is a medical mistake. The erring human mind is inharmonious in itself. From it arises the inharmonious body. To ignore God as of little use in sickness is a mistake. Instead of thrusting him aside in times of bodily trouble and waiting for the hour of strength in which to acknowledge him, we should learn that he can do all things for us, in sickness as in health. Failing to recover health through adherence to physiology and hygiene, the despairing invalid often drops them, and in his extremity, and only as a last resort, turns to God. The invalid's faith in the divine mind is less than in drugs, air, and exercise, or he would have resorted to mind first. The balance of power is considered to be with matter by most of the medical systems, but when mind at last asserts its mastery over sin, disease, and death, then is man found to be harmonious and immortal. Should we implore a corporeal God to heal the sick out of his personal volition, or should we understand that infinite divine principle which heals? If we rise no higher than blind faith, the science of healing is not attained, and soul existence in the place of sense existence is not comprehended. We apprehend life in divine science only as we live above corporeal sense and correct it. Our proportionate admission of the claims of good or of evil determines the harmony of our existence, our health, our longevity, and our Christianity. We cannot serve two masters, nor perceive divine science with the material senses. Drugs and hygiene cannot successfully usurp the place and power of the divine source of all health and perfection. If God made man both good and evil, man must remain thus. What can improve God's work? Again, an error in the premise must appear in the conclusion. To have one God and avail yourself of the power of Spirit, you must love God supremely. The flesh lusted against the Spirit. The flesh and Spirit can no more unite in action than good can coincide with evil. It is not wise to take a halting and halfway position or to expect to work equally with Spirit and matter, truth and error. There is but one way, namely God and His idea, which leads to spiritual being. The scientific government of the body must be attained through the divine mind. It is impossible to gain control over the body in any other way. On this fundamental point, timid conservatism is absolutely inadmissible. Only through radical reliance on truth can scientific healing power be realized. Substituting good words for a good life, fair seeming for straightforward character, is a poor shift for the weak and worldly who think the standard of Christian science too high for them. If the scales are evenly adjusted, the removal of a single weight from either scale gives preponderance to the opposite. Whatever influence you cast on the side of matter, you take away from mind, which would otherwise outweigh all else. Your belief militates against your health when it ought to be enlisted on the side of health. When sick, according to belief, you rush after drugs, search out the material so-called laws of health, and depend upon them to heal you, though you have already brought yourself into the slough of disease through just this false belief. Because man-made systems insist that man becomes sick and useless, suffers and dies, all in consonance with the laws of God, are we to believe it? Are we to believe an authority which denies God's spiritual command relating to perfection, an authority which Jesus proved to be false? He did the will of the Father. He healed sickness in defiance of what is called material law, but in accordance with God's law, the law of mind. I have discerned disease in the human mind and recognized the patient's fear of it months before the so-called disease made its appearance in the body. Disease being a belief, a latent illusion of mortal mind, the sensation would not appear if the error of belief was met and destroyed by truth. Here let a word be noticed which will be better understood hereafter. Chemicalization. By chemicalization I mean the process which mortal mind and body undergo in the change of belief from a material to a spiritual basis. Whenever an aggravation of symptoms has occurred through mental chemicalization, I have seen the mental signs assuring me that danger was over before the patient felt the change, and I have said to the patient, "You are healed," sometimes to his discomfiture when he was incredulous. But it always came about as I had foretold. I name these facts to show that disease has a mental, mortal origin, that faith in rules of health or in drugs begets and fosters disease by attracting the mind to the subject of sickness, by exciting fear of disease, and by dosing the body in order to avoid it. The faith reposed in these things should find stronger support and a higher home. If we understood the control of mind over body, we should put no faith in material means. Science not only reveals the origin of all disease as mental, but it also declares that all disease is cured by divine mind. There can be no healing except by this mind, however much we trust a drug or any other means towards which human faith or endeavor is directed. It is mortal mind, not matter, which brings to the sick whatever good they may seem to receive from materiality. But the sick are never really healed except by means of the divine power. Only the action of truth, life, and love can give harmony. Whatever teaches man to have other laws and to acknowledge other powers than the divine mind is anti-Christian. The good that a poisonous drug seems to do is evil, for it robs man of reliance on God, omnipotent mind, and according to belief, poisons the human system. Truth is not the basis of theogony. Modes of matter form neither a moral nor a spiritual system. The discord which calls for material methods is the result of the exercise of faith in material modes, faith in matter instead of in spirit. Did Jesus understand the economy of man less than Graham or Cutter? Christian ideas certainly present what human theories exclude, the principle of man's harmony. The text, "Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die," not only contradicts human systems, but points to the self-sustaining and eternal truth. The demands of truth are spiritual and reach the body through mind. The best interpreter of man's needs said, "Take no thought for your life what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink." If there are material laws which prevent disease, what then causes it? Not divine law, for Jesus healed the sick and cast out error, always in opposition, never in obedience to physics. Spiritual causation is the one question to be considered, for more than all other spiritual causation relates to human progress. The age seems ready to approach this subject, to ponder somewhat the supremacy of spirit, and at least to touch the hem of truth's garment. The description of man as purely physical or as both material and spiritual, but in either case dependent upon his physical organization, is the Pandora box, from which all ills have gone forth, especially despair. Matter, which takes divine power into its own hands and claims to be a creator, is a fiction in which paganism and lust are so sanctioned by society that mankind has caught their moral contagion. Through discernment of the spiritual opposite of materiality, even the way through Christ's truth, man will reopen with the key of divine science the gates of paradise, which human beliefs have closed, and will find himself unfallen, upright, pure, and free, not needing to consult almanacs for the probabilities either of his life or of the weather, not needing to study brainology to learn how much of a man he is. Mind's control over the universe, including man, is no longer an open question, but is demonstrable science. Jesus illustrated the divine principle and the power of immortal mind by healing sickness and sin and destroying the foundations of death. Mistaking his origin and nature, man believes himself to be combined matter and spirit. He believes that spirit is sifted through matter, carried on a nerve, exposed to ejection by the operation of matter. The intellectual, the moral, the spiritual, yea, the image of infinite mind, subject to non-intelligence. No more sympathy exists between the flesh and spirit than between Belial and Christ. The so-called laws of matter are nothing but false beliefs that intelligence and life are present where mind is not. These false beliefs are the procurant cause of all sin and disease. The opposite truth, that intelligence and life are spiritual, never material, destroys sin, sickness, and death. The fundamental error lies in the supposition that man is a material outgrowth, and that the cognizance of good or evil, which he has through the bodily senses, constitutes his happiness or misery. Theorizing about man's development from mushrooms to monkeys and from monkeys into men amounts to nothing in the right direction and very much in the wrong. Materialism grades the human species as rising from matter upward. How then is the material species maintained if man passes through what we call death, and death is the Rubicon of spirituality? Spirit can form no real link in this supposed chain of material being. But divine science reveals the eternal chain of existence as uninterrupted and wholly spiritual. Yet this can be realized only as the false sense of being disappears. If man was first a material being, he must have passed through all the forms of matter in order to become man. If the material body is man, he is a portion of matter or dust. On the contrary, man is the image and likeness of spirit. And the belief that there is soul in sense or life in matter obtains in mortals, alias mortal mind, to which the apostle refers when he says that we must put off the old man. What is man? Brain, heart, blood, bones, etc.? The material structure? If the real man is in the material body, you take away a portion of the man when you amputate a limb. The surgeon destroys manhood and worms annihilate it. But the loss of a limb or injury to a tissue is sometimes the quickener of manliness, and the unfortunate cripple may present more nobility than the statuesque athlete, teaching us by his very deprivations that a man's a man for at that. When we admit that matter, heart, blood, brain, acting through the five physical senses, constitutes man, we fail to see how anatomy can distinguish between humanity and the brute, or determine when man is really man and has progressed farther than his animal progenitors. When the supposition that spirit is within what it creates and the potter is subject to the clay is individualized, truth is reduced to the level of error, and the sensible is required to be made manifest through the insensible. What is termed matter manifests nothing but a material mentality. Neither the substance nor the manifestation of spirit is obtainable through matter. Spirit is positive. Matter is spirit's contrary, the absence of spirit. For positive spirit to pass through a negative condition would be spirit's destruction. Anatomy declares man to be structural. Physiology continues this explanation, measuring human strength by bones and sinews, and human life by material law. Man is spiritual, individual, and eternal. Material structure is mortal. Phrenology makes man knavish or honest according to the development of the cranium. But anatomy, physiology, phrenology do not define the image of God, the real immortal man. Human reason and religion come slowly to the recognition of spiritual facts, and so continue to call upon matter to remove the error which the human mind alone has created. The idols of civilization are far more fatal to health and longevity than are the idols of barbarism. The idols of civilization call into action less faith than Buddhism in a supreme governing intelligence. The Eskimo restore health by incantations as consciously as do civilized practitioners by their more studied methods. Is civilization only a higher form of idolatry that man should bow down to a flesh brush, to flannels, to baths, diet, exercise, and air? Nothing save divine power is capable of doing so much for man as he can do for himself. The footsteps of thought, rising above material standpoints, are slow and portend a long night to the traveler. But the angels of his presence, the spiritual intuitions that tell us when the night is far spent, the day is at hand, are our guardians in the gloom. Whoever opens the way in Christian Science is a pilgrim and stranger, marking out the path for generations yet unborn. The thunder of Sinai and the Sermon on the Mount are pursuing and will overtake the ages, rebuking in their course all error and proclaiming the kingdom of heaven on earth. Truth is revealed. It needs only to be practiced. Mortal belief is all that enables a drug to cure mortal ailments. Anatomy admits that mind is somewhere in man, though out of sight. Then if an individual is sick, why treat the body alone and administer a dose of despair to the mind? Why declare that the body is diseased and picture this disease to the mind, rolling it under the tongue as a sweet morsel and holding it before the thought of both physician and patient? We should understand that the cause of disease obtains in the mortal human mind, and its cure comes from the immortal divine mind. We should prevent the images of disease from taking form in thought and we should efface the outlines of disease already formulated in the minds of mortals. When there are fewer prescriptions and less thought is given to sanitary subjects, there will be better constitutions and less disease. In old times, who ever heard of dyspepsia, cerebrospinal meningitis, hay fever, and rose cold? What an abuse of natural beauty to say that a rose, the smile of God, can produce suffering. The joy of its presence, its beauty and fragrance, should uplift the thought and dissuade any sense of fear or fever. It is profane to fancy that the perfume of clover and the breath of new-mown hay can cause glandular inflammation, sneezing, and nasal pangs. If a random thought, calling itself dyspepsia, had tried to tyrannize over our forefathers, it would have been rooted by their independence and industry. Then people had less time for selfishness, coddling, and sickly after-dinner talk. The exact amount of food the stomach could digest was not discussed according to Cutter, nor referred to sanitary laws. A man's belief in those days was not so severe upon the gastric juices. Bowman's medical experiments did not govern the digestion. Damp atmosphere and freezing snow empurpled the plump cheeks of our ancestors, but they never indulged in the refinement of inflamed bronchial tubes. They were as innocent as Adam before he ate the fruit of false knowledge of the existence of tubercles and troches, lungs, and lozenges. Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise, says the English poet, and there is truth in his sentiment. The action of mortal mind on the body was not so injurious before inquisitive modern Eves took up the study of medical works, and unmanly Adams attributed their own downfall and the fate of their offspring to the weakness of their wives. The primitive custom of taking no thought about food left the stomach and bowels free to act in obedience to nature and gave the gospel a chance to be seen in its glorious effects upon the body. A ghastly array of diseases was not paraded before the imagination. There were fewer books on digestion and more sermons in stones and good in everything. When the mechanism of the human mind gives place to the divine mind, selfishness and sin, disease and death will lose their foothold. Human fear of miasma would load with disease the air of Eden and weigh down mankind with superimposed and conjectural evils. Mortal mind is the worst foe of the body, while divine mind is its best friend. Should all cases of organic disease be treated by a regular practitioner, and the Christian Scientist try truth only in cases of hysteria, hypochondria, and hallucination? One disease is no more real than another. All disease is the result of education, and disease can carry its ill effects no farther than mortal mind maps out the way. The human mind, not matter, is supposed to feel, suffer, and joy. Hence, decided types of acute disease are quite as ready to yield to truth as the less distinct type and chronic form of disease. Truth handles the most malignant contagion with perfect assurance. human mind produces what is termed organic disease as certainly as it produces hysteria, and it must relinquish all its errors, sicknesses, and sins. I have demonstrated this beyond all cavil. The evidence of divine mind's healing power and absolute control is to me as certain as the evidence of my own existence. Mortal mind and body are one. Neither exists without the other, and both must be destroyed by immortal mind. Matter or body is but a false concept of mortal mind. This so-called mind builds its own superstructure, of which the material body is the grosser portion. But from first to last, the body is a sensuous human concept. In the scriptural allegory of the material creation, Adam or error, which represents the erroneous theory of life and intelligence in matter, had the naming of all that was material. These names indicated matter's properties, qualities, and forms. But a lie, the opposite of truth, cannot name the qualities and effects of what is termed matter, and create the so-called laws of the flesh, nor can a lie hold the preponderance of power in any direction against God, Spirit, and truth. If a dose of poison is swallowed through mistake, and the patient dies, even though physician and patient are expecting favorable results, does human belief, you ask, cause this death? Even so, and as directly as if the poison had been intentionally taken. In such cases, a few persons believe the potion swallowed by the patient to be harmless, but the vast majority of mankind, though they know nothing of this particular case and this special person, believe the arsenic, the strychnine, or whatever the drug used to be poisonous, for it is set down as a poison by mortal mind. Consequently, the result is controlled by the majority of opinions, not by the infinitesimal minority of opinions in the sick chamber. Heredity is not a law. The remote cause or belief of disease is not dangerous because of its priority and the connection of past mortal thoughts with present. The predisposing cause and the exciting cause are mental. Perhaps an adult has a deformity produced prior to his birth by the fright of his mother. When wrested from human belief and based on science or the divine mind, to which all things are possible, that chronic case is not difficult to cure. Mortal mind acting from the basis of sensation in matter is animal magnetism. But this so-called mind, from which comes all evil, contradicts itself and must finally yield to the eternal truth or the divine mind expressed in science. In proportion to our understanding of Christian Science, we are freed from the belief of heredity, of mind in matter, or animal magnetism, and we disarm sin of its imaginary power in proportion to our spiritual understanding of the status of immortal being. Ignorant of the methods and the basis of metaphysical healing, you may attempt to unite with it hypnotism, spiritualism, electricity, but none of these methods can be mingled with metaphysical healing. Whoever reaches the understanding of Christian Science in its proper signification will perform the sudden cures of which it is capable, but this can be done only by taking up the cross and following Christ in the daily life. Science can heal the sick, who are absent from their healers, as well as those present, since space is no obstacle to mind. Immortal mind heals what eye hath not seen, but the spiritual capacity to apprehend thought and to heal by the truth power is won only as man is found not in self-righteousness, but reflecting the divine nature. Every medical method has its advocates. The preference of mortal mind for a certain method creates a demand for that method, and the body then seems to require such treatment. You can even educate a healthy horse so far in physiology that he will take cold without his blanket, whereas the wild animal, left to his instincts, sniffs the wind with delight. The epizootic is a humanly evolved ailment which a wild horse might never have. Treatises on anatomy, physiology, and health, sustained by what is termed material law, are the promoters of sickness and disease. It should not be proverbial that so long as you read medical works, you will be sick. The sedulous matron, studying her jar with homeopathic pellet and powder in hand, ready to put you into a sweat, to move the bowels, or to produce sleep, is unwittingly sowing the seeds of reliance on matter, and her household may ere long reap the effect of this mistake. Descriptions of disease given by physicians and advertisements of quackery are both prolific sources of sickness. As mortal mind is the husbandman of error, it should be taught to do the body no harm and to uproot its false sowing. The patient sufferer tries to be satisfied when he sees his would-be healers busy, and his faith in their efforts is somewhat helpful to them and to himself. But in science, one must understand the resuscitating law of life. This is the seed within itself bearing fruit after its kind, spoken of in Genesis. Physicians should not deport themselves as if mind were non-existent, nor take the ground that all causation is matter instead of mind. Ignorant that the human mind governs the body, its phenomenon, the invalid may unwittingly add more fear to the mental reservoir already overflowing with that emotion. Doctors should not implant disease in the thoughts of their patients, as they so frequently do, by declaring disease to be a fixed fact, even before they go to work to eradicate the disease through the material faith which they inspire. Instead of furnishing thought with fear, they should try to correct this turbulent element of mortal mind by the influence of divine love which casteth out fear. When man is governed by God, the ever-present mind, who understands all things, man knows that with God all things are possible. The only way to this living truth which heals the sick is found in the science of divine mind as taught and demonstrated by Christ Jesus. To reduce inflammation, dissolve a tumor, or cure organic disease, I have found divine truth more potent than all lower remedies. And why not? Since mind, God, is the source and condition of all existence. Before deciding that the body, matter, is disordered, one should ask, who art thou that repliest to spirit? Can matter speak for itself, or does it hold the issues of life? Matter, which can neither suffer nor enjoy, has no partnership with pain and pleasure, but mortal belief has such a partnership. When you manipulate patients, you trust in electricity and magnetism more than in truth. and for that reason you employ matter rather than mind. You weaken or destroy your power when you resort to any except spiritual means. It is foolish to declare that you manipulate patients, but that you lay no stress on manipulation. If this be so, why manipulate? In reality, you manipulate because you are ignorant of the baneful effects of magnetism, or are not sufficiently spiritual to depend on spirit. In either case, you must improve your mental condition till you finally attain the understanding of Christian Science. If you are too material to love the science of mind and are satisfied with good words instead of effects, if you adhere to error and are afraid to trust truth, the question then recurs, Adam, where art thou? It is unnecessary to resort to aught besides mind in order to satisfy the sick that you are doing something for them, for if they are cured, they generally know it and are satisfied. Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. If you have more faith in drugs than in truth, this faith will incline you to the side of matter and error. Any hypnotic power you may exercise will diminish your ability to become a scientist, and vice versa. The act of healing the sick through divine mind alone, of casting out error with truth, shows your position as a Christian Scientist. The demands of God appeal to thought only, but the claims of mortality and what are termed laws of nature appertain to matter. Which then are we to accept as legitimate and capable of producing the highest human good? We cannot obey both physiology and spirit, for one absolutely destroys the other, and one or the other must be supreme in the affections. It is impossible to work from two standpoints. If we attempt it, we shall presently hold to the one and despise the other. The hypotheses of mortals are antagonistic to science and cannot mix with it. This is clear to those who heal the sick on the basis of science. Mind's government of the body must supersede the so-called laws of matter. Obedience to material law prevents full obedience to spiritual law, the law which overcomes material conditions and puts matter under the feet of mind. Mortals entreat the divine mind to heal the sick, and forthwith shut out the aid of mind by using material means, thus working against themselves and their prayers and denying man's God-given ability to demonstrate mind's sacred power. Pleas for drugs and loss of health come from some sad incident, or else from ignorance of Christian Science and its transcendent power. To admit that sickness is a condition over which God has no control is to presuppose that omnipotent power is powerless on some occasions. The law of Christ or truth makes all things possible to spirit, but the so-called laws of matter would render spirit of no avail and demand obedience to materialistic codes, thus departing from the basis of one God, one lawmaker. To suppose that God constitutes laws of inharmony is a mistake. Discords have no support from nature or divine law, however much is said to the contrary. Can the agriculturalist, according to belief, produce a crop without sowing the seed and awaiting its germination according to the laws of nature? The answer is no, and yet the scriptures inform us that sin or error first caused the condemnation of man to till the ground and indicate that obedience to God will remove this necessity. Truth never made error necessary, nor devised a law to perpetuate error. The supposed laws which result in weariness and disease are not his laws, for the legitimate and only possible action of truth is the production of harmony. Laws of nature are laws of spirit, but mortals commonly recognize as law that which hides the power of spirit. Divine mind rightly demands man's entire obedience, affection, and strength. No reservation is made for any lesser loyalty. Obedience to truth gives man power and strength. Submission to error superinduces loss of power. Truth casts out all evils and materialistic methods with the actual spiritual law, the law which gives sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, voice to the dumb, feet to the lame. If Christian Science dishonors human belief, it honors spiritual understanding, and the one mind only is entitled to honor. The so-called laws of health are simply laws of mortal belief. The premises being erroneous, the conclusions are wrong. Truth makes no laws to regulate sickness, sin, and death, for these are unknown to truth and should not be recognized as reality. Belief produces the results of belief, and the penalties it affixes last so long as the belief and are inseparable from it. The remedy consists in probing the trouble to the bottom, in finding and casting out by denial the error of belief which produces a mortal disorder, never honoring erroneous belief with the title of law nor yielding obedience to it. Truth, life, and love are the only legitimate and eternal demands on man, and they are spiritual lawgivers enforcing obedience through divine statutes. Controlled by the divine intelligence, man is harmonious and eternal. Whatever is governed by a false belief is discordant and mortal. We say man suffers from the effects of cold, heat, fatigue. This is human belief, not the truth of being, for matter cannot suffer. Mortal mind alone suffers, not because a law of matter has been transgressed, but because a law of this so-called mind has been disobeyed. I have demonstrated this as a rule of divine science by destroying the delusion of suffering from what is termed a fatally broken physical law. A woman whom I cured of consumption always breathed with great difficulty when the wind was from the east. I sat silently by her side a few moments. Her breath came gently. The inspirations were deep and natural. I then requested her to look at the weather vane. She looked and saw that it pointed due east. The wind had not changed, but her thought of it had, and so her difficulty in breathing had gone. The wind had not produced the difficulty. My metaphysical treatment changed the action of her belief on the lungs, and she never suffered again from east winds, but was restored to health. No system of hygiene but Christian Science is purely mental. Before this book was published, other books were in circulation, which discussed mental medicine and mind cure, operating through the power of the Earth's magnetic currents to regulate life and health. Such theories and such systems of so-called mind cure which have sprung up are as material as the prevailing systems of medicine. They have their birth in mortal mind, which puts forth a human conception in the name of science to match the divine science of immortal mind, even as the necromancers of Egypt strove to emulate the wonders wrought by Moses. Such theories have no relationship to Christian science, which rests on the conception of God as the only life, substance, and intelligence, and excludes the human mind as a spiritual factor in the healing work. Jesus cast out evil and healed the sick, not only without drugs, but without hypnotism, which is the reverse of ethical and pathological truth power. Erroneous mental practice may seem for a time to benefit the sick, but the recovery is not permanent. This is because erroneous methods act on and through the material stratum of the human mind called brain, which is but a mortal consolidation of material mentality and its suppositional activities.